Okay, well, I'm obviously happy to be here today, participating in this interesting symposium. And a lot of what I'm going to talk about today is going to be more conceptual than data-rich, partly because of my role as director of this facility, which is Russell Ranch Sustainable Agricultural Facility, which is a long-term comparison now in its 22nd year, actually, comparing organic and conventional and hybrid systems, and really wrestling with this question of how do we introduce more soil biodiversity? You know, how do we harness? I say harness, and I often don't like that word. Develop deeper relationships, maybe that's a better word, right, with soil biodiversity, with soil microorganisms. So depending on how your angle wants to be. And a lot of it is what we have to do has to be really practical. It can't just be in the lab and coming up with really interesting types of things that happen in flasks or in small plots, but it's getting it into this actually full-scale system to be able to see what works. And we're in the process of asking a lot of these questions. So I'm coming more from the point of view of thinking about it. Are people interested in soil biology for farming? We had a small workshop on that with a variety of farmers and students and governmental representatives, and they were just asked to rank the importance of soil biology and farming, soil biodiversity, and most people ranked it in fourth and fifth position, and noticed that some of them, more of them, think it's going to be more important in the future. You know, that this is a direction that we need to be going in. Maybe it's not so important now, but it's getting there. So it's definitely a really an area that has grabbed the interest of a lot of people. And I think the other amazing thing that's going on is the interest in the human body and the microbiome. And there's so many parallels between how we think about our bodies and our guts and how we think about soil that really has, I think, opened up the conversation for a lot of people that they can, like, relate to it and get to it. Like, do you take just a probiotic? Or do you change your diet, you know? Are you just adding the organism that you need, or are you changing how you're living, right? And these are the same issues in looking at these larger systems. So I think it's really wonderful that, as usual, medicine sort of leads the way with the technologies and the funding to be able to look at these things. But I think actually medicine has learned a lot from us, you know, from nature, yeah. So it's been a nice two-way street. And so I'm looking at, you know, a focus on can we bring more soil biodiversity into conventional management. And in this case, conventional, I'm defining in a row crop sense in California where we use, why is my battery power low? Maybe I just salt it. So let him worry about it. But conventional is a mineral fertilizer using pesticides, no cover crop. Any carbon that goes in is from any stubble, and that would be a function of how much, you know, whether you're growing corn or tomatoes. And in this case, tillage is not a variable. Tillage is the same in these systems. And you can see in the bottom picture that we're putting in quite a bit more carbon in the organic than the conventional systems, where the nitrogen is about the same. But that's something that's distinguishing the two systems. It's not a trivial difference. Okay, so biodiversity, the iceberg, right? It's a brown iceberg. It's a soil iceberg, but just as, you know, most icebergs hide, well, you know, what you're just seeing is the tip. So what we see above ground pales compared to what's going on below ground. And you all know this, that there's a tremendous, tremendous amount of biodiversity and below ground everywhere, but definitely more so in some areas than others. And conventional agriculture has a lot of soil biology going on in it already. No question about it, right? There's a lot of soil biology working away there. They're not sterile systems. I know people sometimes try to sell things to farmers saying that your soil is dead. It certainly may be not very biodiverse, may not be functioning very well, but it's a lot of stuff going on all the time. Pesticides do degrade, right? Organic residues do decompose. Nitrous oxide comes out, you know? So there's organisms there doing a lot of different things, sequestering carbon and fixing nitrogen and doing all kinds of building so organic matter. I mean, a lot is going on, but obviously a lot more could be going on. A lot of this biodiversity, by the way, is taken for granted. We don't think about it. It just happens. Yeah. And there's a lot probably of opportunity even within what is there that could be fostered or utilized more. So some concerns about conventional systems, but I'm saying not exclusively, because some of these are issues with any agricultural system. I don't want to just keep like hitting on unconventional. Some of these are shared by a lot of different agricultural systems. That reduced biodiversity leads to decreased resistance to disease, and also just perturbations, like boom, the surprises, like the drought, right? Things that are not part of just the ups and downs of daily life. Contamination of ground and surface water from, misuse of both nitrogen and pesticides and phosphorus, right, as well. Vulnerability to prices and availability of inputs because of reliance on external inputs, and looking at what's happening with fossil fuel prices, and increasing resistance of pests because of the chemicals that are used that build up resistance, and definitely big time reduction in quantity, but also quality of soils, and that's pretty well documented. It's a big loss. Okay, so what can you do? So I just put this up. This is from Estelle Dominati, who looks at ecosystem services, and she is looking at soil here, how you fit soil in an ecosystem service perspective. And the thing to look at is, here's the natural capital of soil, and here's all these cultural regulating, provisioning services that help mankind, right? All the good stuff humans get out of it, of these cultural regulating and provisioning services. But she pulls out the natural capital of soil, and there's inherent properties of soil. It's just how it is. It's what's there. And there's these manageable properties, where there's things that you can do to the soil to change it. And soil is always degrading and reforming and maintaining. So you have this constant sort of flux of things going on. And I put blue circles around, and I probably didn't even get them all, but of all places where microorganisms are playing roles in this variety of different things that are going on in soil, that is then leading to these services that we're asking out of soil, right? But big role, big footprint of microbes. I mean, they're all over the place, which is interesting to think about it when you want to enhance soil biodiversity. It's like, where do you begin, in a sense? And do you keep a narrow focus and say, oh, I want that? Or do you step back and look at, you know, sort of broader perspectives? And I'm going to be talking about that a little bit. So why don't we benefit from soil biodiversity in conventional systems as much as we could? Well, there's a lot that stands in the way. And again, not all of this is unique to conventional, right? I don't want to just like say it's a conventional thing, right? This is true in other farming systems. Carbon. Not enough carbon goes in. We remove a lot of plant biomass, or we grow things that don't have enough biomass that leaves much behind. Also, people like maybe are increasing pulling off like the corn stubble that they might have put back in the ground because there's other uses for it, you know. So there's these choices that people make that, like, maybe you're not going to feed the soil that time or feed it as much. Physical disturbance from tillage, where you break up habitats, but also these networks, like they just got it all figured out. Well, there's hyphae, and they're all talking to each other, and then boom. And also compaction from machinery. Bare soils during fallow periods, and you know we have this a lot in California, and there's obviously no carbon going in, there's no protection from heat. If you're an irrigated system, you're not putting water in. Toxic chemicals, that's pretty obvious with pesticides, and they're particularly bad for certain organisms, and unless it's a fumigant, and then they're bad for everything. Fumigants are very satisfying if you want to kill things. And then if you have symbiotic relationships, high fertilizer content is going to stop those. And also many recommended agricultural practices, they're kind of like cookbook, right? They're like, you do this, maybe you do a test. They may come from crop advisors who don't spend much time on the farm, but they say, here, this is what you do, here's this crop, and you do this and that. Often targeting single issues, right? Rather than looking at the whole system. Also addressing symptoms, there's all these human body analogies, addressing symptoms rather than looking at the underlying causes and short-term perspectives. So how can we better utilize and create relationships with soil biodiversity? And I think that there's two different major philosophies, but there's multiple ones in between. This is really a gradient. But these philosophies you see in many different systems. You see it in restoration, you see it in remediation, you see it in the gut, you see it in wastewater treatment, you see it in ag. These different sort of approaches between, do you manipulate conditions to influence naturally occurring organisms, or do you add organisms as inoculants? Right? Different kinds of philosophies, and not necessarily exclusive. Right, but very different sorts of mindsets in it. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about inoculation. We've done a tiny bit of work in it, and there's people out there who have done way more, and this symposium will be filled with it. I'm just setting up a straw man. We did a project adding VA mycorrhizal fungi inoculant to tomato seedlings, even in the greenhouse and in the soil, and found no impact on tomato yields and very little colonization. Just a one-time experiment, right? We followed the rules. We worked with the company and we followed the directions right on the box, right? You know, it didn't work. And these things often don't work, right? And I'm not trying to say this was even a good experiment or anything in particular. And on the other hand, 2 years, adding like composted poultry manure has actually had some really good benefits on yields and disease reduction. But I'm not really going to talk about that. But I just want to put that up there. There's compost versus this like particular inoculant, right? Just this, again, in this gradient. So why does inoculation often fail? Well, often we don't understand the abiotic reaction requirements of the organisms or their biotic requirements, like. Are they there with their friends, or can they find who they need to be with to make it work? Like, because often we're just like, the application method, we're just like dumping them in and saying, you figure it out, guys, go, you can do it. It may very well not work. Conditions at the time of establishment may not be good. There can be predation and competition from, yeah, those guys that are in the soil waiting for, oh, here comes some more suckers. Let's get to work on them. Also, I think this is really important, is that I think it takes a lot of work to get to the point to, like, make it work. Like, I'm not saying it can't work, but that you don't just do it one time. It's not cookbook. It's not like adding fertilizer, and I think that there's, you know, a lot of research that needs to be done on it. And then, of course, look at who we're putting in, up in these industrially grown fat cats, you know, these guys that have had this great life in fermentation vats, and then they hit the soil, and I didn't know this was what I was supposed to have. But this is a nice article by Backer et al. That talks about strategies to increase success of inoculation, with looking at strategies for the plant, for the microbe, and of the plant that might work with the microbe. So looking at it almost like as a system in the inoculation approach, where you might be more careful about why you're putting them in, like what niche are they going to occupy, or disrupting it, doing something in the system that might actually give them some in by knocking out somebody else, or getting them set up with the plant ahead of time, you know, so there already is a relationship with them. I mean, that's what our drenches with the mycorrhizal inoculum that we did with the tomatoes, you know, but I don't think they got their relationship down yet with these drenches, you know, of putting the roots in with the mycorrhizal inoculum. I don't think that was enough. And then also, you know, with the plant, can you do things to make sure that it's got, like, good root exudates that are going to really support it? Have the signaling compounds. There's a lot of interest in signaling compounds. I don't know if anyone's going to talk about this here, but where you might even be able to help, like, the communication of a facilitator, chemical facilitator, to help them find each other. So I think there's ways to work on this. But then I want to talk about this other approach, so this broader approach of managing soil and agronomic conditions to promote existing organisms and communities. And I first want to just remind us all that when we talk about soil, we're often talking about soil biodiversity. When we talk about soil biodiversity, you cannot not talk about soil. They're intimately related. That's the nightmare of it, but that's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's why we who are soil scientists love soil. So you've got here, like, these drivers of what's going to happen, climate management, and then you have plant and soil biodiversity, you have the soil structure and the physical chemical properties going on, and then you have, those are the factors, right, and then you have the processes that come out from these interrelationships of these different components, so carbon and nitrogen cycling and the water cycle, and which leads then to these services, these outcomes, end use efficiency, water use efficiency, carbon sequestration, which is not just adding a microbe, it's the microbe interacting with this complex set of things going on in the soil. So management practices for managing microbes sort of more holistically might be manipulating what they eat and you know, a lot of different things, that giving them their donors, their acceptors, other nutrients, manipulating their environment. Water, oxygen. I worked a lot in bioremediation, right? So there was a lot of these kinds of manipulations to get things to stick, or, you know, and how do you put them in? Should we be making lasagna? You know, or different kinds of ways to try to, like, get organisms in the right place or concentrate them into particular areas. There may be other soil amendments. You may use inhibitors to knock out particular groups to try to then promote others, and promoting symbiotic relationships. So I want to actually show you something that is from a collaboration I have with a farmer called Scott Park, who's a big organic farmer. He used to be a conventional farmer. So he's thought a lot about introducing soil biology into what he's done. And he's extremely successful. He has the newest truck in his community, and he's one of the only organic farmers up there. So he's very, very successful in big scale. Okay, so his philosophy is feed them, give them shelter, keep them covered, don't disturb them too much, don't try to do too much, and get out of the way. So I want to show a short clip of Scott talking.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. Go fast.
All right. There we go.
Excellent. Uh-oh. How do we make it louder? I hope you can hear it. To hear, isn't it? Okay, so you can hear, I hope that you could hear something, that he talks a lot about experimenting, trying different things, you know, broad, not so much like looking at one particular thing, but creating a system that, in that figure that I showed you before where everything is interrelated, that's addressing all these different things. And just rattling through some of those, it's like forming, creating soil organic matter. We know microbes are a major part of that. Soil fertility doesn't fall from the sky. We know that microbes actually are precursors for soil organic matter. I mean, how's that going to change how we manage for soil organic matter? It hasn't really trickled in yet with that. Okay, that's for 20 minutes. 2 minutes, but it says 30 minutes on the program. Yeah, okay. So microbial biomass is a big part of that, goes along with carbon. Biomass is a pool of available nitrogen for the system, so that it again, it's going along with the organic matter. Soil structure goes along with this as well. You're creating, again, through these general practices that are being done, you have improvement of soil structure that then, you know, has big implications for water movement and gas exchange. All of these microbial processes, right? This is all microbes doing things, but it's not thinking about them necessarily in isolation. So what are the obstacles, real and perceived, for increasing biodiversity in conventional ag? And I talked to both Israel Herrera, my farm manager, and Scott about this. So what are the concerns about leaving more organic matter or putting more organic matter in the field? They're worried about trash causing disease, like a lot of people want to clean it all up. Landowners may not care about this investment in the future. Conventional practices are generally what's pushed by extension people, not these other kinds of approaches. Sometimes you can get payment for the straw. Decomposition can be too slow. People are really worried about getting in the next year in time for the crops. Legitimate things, clogging experiment. Israel hates clogging of his equipment when he's trying to plant things. Disturbing the soil less. Well, a lot of times they've already got the equipment. You know, expensive equipment, so you're going to use it. Pressure from these companies selling it, bad habits in the past, like he talked about, has the history of it. Now you're stuck. You got those clods. You got to keep breaking them down every year. Criteria for what is clean enough. Like, when do you stop? People like often don't know. Like, when is enough? And then how do you deal with bad structure? Keeping the soil covered for a greater portion of the year. There's issues with water, in particular. Like, there's going to be water used by those crops, and also the timing again of it. And pesticide use, fear, insurance of using spray, and then you don't have the biodiversity built up in your system, right? So the blue things, those are like the commitment, right? If you are committed to it for a long time in your system, some of these benefits are going to be coming from that because you're already going to have this going, but it takes time to get there. And I think another interesting thing, this is trait-based. There's a lot of trait-based analysis now of microbial communities. It's a very interesting area. This was from a review article by Krauss. But you might want to think about what you want, too, when you're looking at who you want to introduce into your systems. And this is from plant ecology, but looking at three kinds of sort of situations, one being a disturbance system, one being a stress system, and one being a competition system. And this, you know, it's best to just go get the paper and look at it, but you can see that with these different kinds of, like, paradigms or conditions that are sort of governing the situation, you might want some very different kinds of organisms to deal with it. And what's interesting are the tools that are starting to come up, like looking at RNA copy numbers as a parameter that you might look at for a value in an organism that might help you in that kind of situation. So I think this is interesting to start thinking more ecologically about what's going on and ecologically how you might approach some of these things. Okay, thank God we've got the National Soil Health Initiative. This goes very compatible with these kinds of things that we're talking about, that there is like a lot of press and interest in this. And I think just to wrap up, challenges in managing soil biology is, you know, much of we think of as soil is actually biological. Indirect management practices are often going to do a lot more than direct manipulation, but people are going to talk about great stuff today in this session. So I know there's new things. Everything's connected. That's good because then you can get multiple benefits out of the same thing. But it could be bad because you might have something that you don't want happening when something happens. And then it takes time to invest in these systems to get where things are positive. Resistance and resilience are things that are going to come out of these problems, and you may not have these quick fixes. So, and we've got to get the public, we have to stop just giving prizes for the biggest pumpkin. and start giving the prize at the county fair for the most biodiverse soil. So.